Here we go, episode 417 on the Flip Empire Show.
Welcome to the Flip Empire Show, bringing you the interviews, strategies, and insights for smart real estate investors. Alex is ready to answer your questions and provide you with the tools you need to succeed in real estate, all through case studies, current real-life transactions, and proven marketing strategies. Your success and freedom starts now with your host, Alex Pardo.
What is up? Welcome back. Alex Pardo here and bringing you another Flip Empire Show. And guys, I have been getting a lot of feedback, a lot of really good feedback, which I'm grateful for and I appreciate, on the Facebook Lives that we have been doing. And what I've been doing is now, I'm going to still do shorter Q&A shows, do not get me wrong. But on this particular episode, we did an Ascend member spotlight. You know, I've had so many more people reaching out to me about Ascend, which is awesome. We are basically almost at capacity. And, you know, the brain power, number one, the quality individual we have within Ascend just blows me away. But the brain power we have and the different niches that are covered is nothing short of just remarkable. And it's pretty awesome. And on today's show, we interviewed to one of Toronto's top home buyers, somebody who is part of our Ascend community, Aaron Moore, somebody who kind of flies under the radar, but goes about the business of, he's got a seven-figure business. He is he does wholesale fix and flip. He's also got a rental portfolio, and he consistently and routinely closes six-figure deals. And what's really interesting is that I would love to share with you that it's a particular ninja marketing strategy or technique or something. But check this out. As you're about to listen and hear, he does this by basically going completely above and beyond what any of his competitors would do. So much so that at one of our Ascend Mastermind retreats, I nicknamed him the Canadian Assassin. And you're going to have to tune in as to why people call him the Canadian Assassin. By the way, this guy is super humble, very quiet, very unassuming, sharp guy, but he is, don't get me wrong, he is the Canadian Assassin. And I think you're going to get a lot out of this show. And there's the big seed we want to plant with you here. So without further ado, let's hop right into episode 417 with myself, Steve Cavanaugh, and Aaron Moore, aka the Canadian Assassin. Aaron Moore, again, aka the Canadian Assassin. What is up, my friend? How are you?
Doing great. It's a wonderful day to be in the great north. The sun's shining when I'm looking out my window.
Well, so talking about the great north, obviously you and your beautiful wife and your family, you guys live in Toronto. You're one of Toronto's top home buyers. Let's kind of give people some perspective, give them some, we will spend just a couple of minutes on this. I really want to get into the meat, into the heart of the live here. But why are people listening? Like, tell everybody a little bit about yourself, how you got in the business. We'll keep it brief, and what your business looks like today in Toronto.
Sure. Yeah, I've been doing this full time since 2008. So I've been around a while. You know, I just started small. Just solo guy, wholesaling, flipping, built up some rental properties over the years. Just in the last couple of years, you know, I probably listening to my American comrades in the industry, I really saw the potential to expand, to grow. So probably just a year and a half ago, I started hiring, you know, hired an office manager, salesperson, got a second salesperson coming on starting tomorrow.
Nice.
So just in time.
Well, which is interesting, by the way, based on the last mastermind retreat, right? That was like one of the things you brought to the table. So it's awesome to see that you're hiring a new person.
That's right. Coming on tomorrow. Should be a guy who likes to win, good commission salesperson. So, you know, let's rock it.
Love it.
But I've been increasing the volume over the past couple of years. Of course, you know, as a solo guy, you can only do so much. But when you build a team, then you can certainly do a lot more. I can do more wholesaling, do more rehabs and flips, and I always like to, you know, close on the occasional rental property, hold it for a long time. That's honestly a chunk of my wealth has come through just, you know, seeing the appreciation in Toronto. Like, the market's gone crazy. Even in the 2008 recession, it went down for maybe 6 to 9 months. So, you know, we've had a strong market here.
Okay. Awesome. Great. Look, one of the things we'll talk about, obviously, you're an experienced wholesaler, fix and flip investor, but you know, I like the fact that you said, hey, your wealth has come from, you know, your assets, right? The stuff that you've bought and hold. And I hope that the wholesalers, the fix and flip investors that are watching this now and in the future, take note of that, because I've shared in the past how that was a mistake I made for a good majority of my career. Is, you know, the income that we can make as in this business is fantastic, and it can really provide a great lifestyle for you. But you really want to focus. We want to be focused on acquiring assets that spit off cash flow. And I know obviously Steve will co-sign on that. And you've got about the business of building a rental portfolio, and you do, you know, what seems to be pretty consistent six-figure flips in Toronto. I know you're a very modest guy that, you know, you're super humble and you might not feel super comfortable talking about that, but dude, we're not holding back. We're opening up the kimono on this live.
Yeah. You know, I don't like to share it that much, but you know, honestly, I know the audience is like it. Even when I talk at local, you know, real estate investing groups here, and I know people like to see the six-figure examples. And, you know, sometimes I'm shocked. Like sometimes I've got an idea I might make six figures when I buy. Other times it's honestly just the market. Like I remember one flip, this is like some years ago now, I thought I'd make 20 to 30K on it. And then it's like some of the spring markets around Toronto are crazy. Mm. There's like bidding wars. And it's just like the prices shoot up since like the last year. It's like, I you know, who would have expected? I didn't, but I, you know, that one, I expected to make 20 to 30 grand. I made over 100K. And I was like, it was crazy. I had a bully offer on it. Because we held offers and we list low and have a little auction, and mm-hmm. someone just came like, boom, I want this. Here's the money. And I was like, what? Didn't pay that much. So I often get surprised by these things. And yeah, like just last week we closed one, and it's a big, you know, I hate to even say these numbers, because if I heard this stuff, you know, 5, 7, 8 years ago, I wouldn't have even been able to conceive of some of this. But yeah, like, you know, I closed one last week. We'll make over 170,000. Now, does this happen every month? No, it does not.
Congratulations.
I wish it did.
Yeah.
But yeah, that just closed last week. We made over 170K. And, you know, really it was, we sold in the pre-COVID market. The market was crazy. We had 16 offers on the property. And so let's say 15 of the offers. Okay. The difference between the highest and the second highest offer was like over 60,000.
Okay. So, wow.
I did not sell for market value. Historical. Maybe it's new market value, but whoever paid this, they overpaid.
Yeah.
You know, people overpay when they're sick and tired of losing on bidding wars.
Yeah.
So they just go and overpay. And, you know, it doesn't happen all the time, but thank you. I will take it.
Yeah. And what was your price point on that?
That was, we sold that one for 770 something.
Okay.
So this wasn't planned, but let's do kind of a mini case study. And I want to keep, by the way, I appreciate, you know, you being so humble and, you know, again, you're not very flashy and out there, but, man, you put yourself in a position to be able to close a $170,000 deal. You know what I mean? And to your point, we're not telling everybody that that's every closing. Of course not. I mean, matter of fact, this is kind of embarrassing to admit, but I say embarrassing, like laughing, right? But we're getting ready to close next week the smallest deal I think my company has ever done. We're making $1,000 on the deal. It's a small piece of lot. It's a land that essentially we're assigning for $1,000. So we've had our six-figure pops, and now we're making $1,000, you know. So we're grateful for them all. You know, money is money, but we certainly don't want to come out here and you know, have any type of income claims that get in this business and you're going to close six-figure deals all the time. That's just not the case, right? At least as a single family investor is what I'll say. But they do come, and there's, you can be very purposeful and intentional about positioning yourself and your company to maximize profit. So let's kind of do a little bit of a case study on that deal. I want to get into the specifics, how you found it, what you did to add value to be able to find a buyer that's willing to completely overpay by 50, 60K more than the previous offer. But before we do that, Aaron, I'm really curious, if that property was on the market today, mm-hmm. what do you think, how much less would it? So you made 170 right before COVID. How much do you think you would have made now in this environment?
You know, the market's pretty good, and I definitely would not have made 170. And I think I might have made 100, Maybe 90, you know, probably somewhere close to that.
Okay.
But I'm sure like that one buyer was, you know, far and above all the others, right?
Yeah.
So I'm sure that person would be out in these latter COVID days, or they'd be much more cautious. And I think the bid, you know, there's still the bidding wars, the multiple offers are still going on, but it's lessened up.
Okay.
And Alex, like you're saying, you know, I am putting myself in the position. Like I'm not just cherry picking deals, and I don't know every deal is going to make me 100K. It's definitely not, but you know, I do lots of deals, and you know, I get some home runs, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not 50% home runs. It's not 75% home runs, but I get home runs.
Yeah. Well, I have a few questions to ask you about the deal, but when you look at the six-figure deals, Aaron, that you've closed in the last 12 to 18 months, is there a particular common denominator or something that you would say, hey, when I look at my biggest pops, this is what they have in common? And it could be something that you guys do, or it could be a particular type of property, a particular type of seller situation. What would you say? Yeah. Because obviously, you know, Steve and I, and Steve Moore, and I've come around to this, I'm about low volume, high margin, as high a margin as possible, right? Yeah. And you're obviously, you have a very high profit margin business. So is there anything in particular that you would kind of advise people listening to this to, what can they do to position themselves to maximize and get as much juice from each of their deals as possible?
Yeah. Well, like one thing, you know, there's around here, there's some seasonality to the market. So like I mentioned, early spring, sometimes even February, March, there's been over the winter here, there's been low inventory. So what you put on the market, say late February, March, sometimes people are just fighting for these deals and paying outrageous prices. So, mm-hmm. you know, that's a bit of just seasonality. It happens every year. So you can ride these waves to some degree. Mm-hmm. I'm also, you know, it's always, we do make money in the buy. Mm-hmm. So yeah, there's definitely houses I bought, right? You know, I'm pretty sure I'm going to make 100K, 80K once I go through the motions of, you know, rehabbing and selling the property. And, you know, I don't need these surprise frantic bidding war pops to make my 100K. But that, you know, that's certainly not every deal either.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I've had success with is rehab houses. There's the houses that are not livable. Then there's the houses that are, say, dated, ugly, but they're livable.
Mm-hmm.
So some of these ones that are livable, I barely do any renos on. And I will just that's called the mortgageable. They're livable and mortgageable.
Mm-hmm.
So I just do little cleanups on some of these types of properties. Think of like the dated hoarder houses. Once you clean them up, clean them out, fix a few things, then they can be livable. And we've made, you know, good chunks of money by doing very little renos on some of those types of properties.
Sure. Okay. Sure.
And of course we get, you know, the ones that like this, you know, you see the house, this house is not mortgageable. It's someone's living in there, but it's not livable. And those, we do the full rent on new kitchens, new bathrooms. And, we're not doing that, all that work to make a couple bucks. So we do expect to make a good chunk of change when we do all that work too.
Yeah.
Aaron, when you are evaluating a potential property for purchase, are you running a formula? How is that? How does that look? And now that we are in this COVID situation, how, if at all, has that changed?
Yeah, I still, you know, around here, I stick with basically 80% of ARV minus repairs.
Okay.
But, you know, I will also, that's just the quick ballpark.
Mm-hmm.
So that is an offer I'm willing to buy at. That's kind of my no-brainer price. And I think I'd still be buying at that no-brainer price today mm-hmm. with COVID. But I do also punch them in my spreadsheet. You know, if we're trying to tighten up the numbers, I'll punch in my spreadsheet. And there's a lot of factors. Like, you know, for me, it's, you know, is it going to be one of these small renos? Is it a huge reno? Is it an old house? Is it a new house?
Mm-hmm.
I'm depending on the complexity, the risk, I'm willing to make a lot less money on certain types of products or property than mm-hmm. others.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So, but I'm definitely a spreadsheet guy. It'll come down to the spreadsheet and I'll punch all the numbers that my estimates in.
Okay. Would you say that when you're running that and you're looking at your potential ARV, do you tend to be very conservative on that ARV, or do you think, okay, well, in this neighborhood, I'm definitely going to be at the top of the market here with my rehab, or how do you size that up? How do you think?
Yeah, I'm pretty conservative, and I'm not expecting my ARV to sell more than anything else that's sold. But honestly, you know, if you fully renovate a house and it's beautiful, mm-hmm. we know we're probably going to sell higher. We may sell for higher than anything else that's sold for. Mm-hmm. So it does happen, but I'm not mm-hmm. going to count on that. No.
Sure. Okay.
Yeah. Got it. Well, Aaron, I just put on the screen there, you know, for people to give you some love, and I put there your nickname, which I know you're not going to be out there changing your Facebook profile. So we kind of teased you at the top of the show. So guys, I want to share with you a quick story. So our first mastermind retreat, which was in Coconut Grove, which is a nice part of Miami, was in October of last year. And we were in the room. And so Steve and I have been in a number of masterminds, and obviously we were running the room here in this particular case. And Ascend is a challenge-based mastermind. So you never know what people are going to come to the table with. But a requirement is that you're always very just genuine, real, authentic, transparent, vulnerable. Those are some of the words that come to mind. And there's challenges that are brought to the table. Some are business in nature, others are personal in nature. And Aaron is somebody who I've had the benefit of coaching him now for 6+ months or so. The guy's got a massive heart. And when I say massive heart, like, that's not an understatement. Like, Aaron, dude, you have a huge heart. And that day it was on display to like another degree, because, you know, you really opened up about the fact that two things were opened up that you revealed that day. Number one, you want to kill your competition, right? And that's where the nickname the Canadian Assassin came from, because you want to like destroy your competition. Like, you want to be the best possible investor you can be in Toronto. Like, that really motivates you and drives you.
Well, there's a reason.
I still like some of my competition, but there's others, maybe not as much.
Well,
but there's a reason.
So there you go. So you cued me up beautifully. That's where I was going next. And I'm not gonna take it the whole thunder, because Steve, I want you to chime in and share your perspective. But the reason Aaron wants to annihilate his competition is because 99% of people don't give a damn about homeowners. Right? Not this guy right here. The reason Aaron is so successful, and he does consistently does six-figure deals. And again, not all of them are six figures, but he does a lot of six-figure deals, and he does very, very well. He's got a rental portfolio, the whole nine, is because this guy goes above and beyond for homeowners like no one I have ever seen. And the fact that you care so much about people, it's really inspiring. So Steve, feel free to, the Canadian Assassin, that's why he got that nickname, because he just wants to completely obliterate the competition. But go ahead.
I think we should let Aaron speak on that, because I think that that will show a lot of probably why he gets the deals he does. And furthermore, I think it will illustrate to people, you know, what it takes to be passionate about what you do. So, Aaron, what can you say to what drives you?
Yeah. Well, thanks for the encouraging words to, you know, get me focused. But, you know, we are dealing, and sometimes I get choked up over this, and, you know, thinking of when I've sat with sellers in their houses and talked about all their issues. So you guys will probably choke me up again today.
We're good at that, aren't we?
Yeah. But yeah, like these people are in tough situations, right?
Yeah.
And It really gets to me when some of these other wholesalers or buyers, whatever they call themselves, you know, they might tie it up for 2 weeks, the property, and they, you know, they just string the seller on. They're, you know, I'm sure they're trying to find a buyer, right? But they're just stringing the person on. And this is, I've seen this, people really desperate.
Mm-hmm.
People that like don't have 2 days, or I mean, sorry, 2 weeks to be strung along, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they're, you know, strung along. Oh yeah, that the ninth day, or you know, we've almost got you a buyer, or whatever they're saying. I don't know what they're saying, but you know, the deal falls apart. The sellers are telling me the people won't answer their phone calls. And yeah,
that's amazing, dude.
Yeah. I love it.
You, I mean, I want to give you a chance to kind of catch your breath, Aaron, but like that right there, that's what you guys are witnessing is just such a genuine show of, or genuine display of just caring so much for people and genuinely wanting to provide a service and a value above anything anybody else is willing to do. And Aaron, and I know where that comes from, man. And that's not where we're taking this particular call. Like there's a reason you feel, I'm having a hard time finding the words for this because it's kind of inspiring.
It's,
you know, and Steve, maybe you can help me out.
Yeah, man, this is passion. This is what so many people set out to do with a business and so few ever fully achieve. Now, you know, I think it just shows you 100% of his heart. I mean, he's putting the money in his pocket at the end of the day because he is so passionate about it. And that bleeds through to his team. That bleeds through to his mission. That bleeds through to, obviously, his clients, his customers, the folks who he's buying houses from. So can you see why we call this gentleman the Canadian assassin? And he's also the quiet assassin because he's a little more reserved and a humble guy. But look, when you go up against somebody with that level of passion, folks, you don't stand a chance. They're going to crush you. They're going to kill you. They want to help the homeowners. They don't care ultimately about the money. The money comes as a byproduct of the passion. Yeah. And the passion keeps this guy going even when he doesn't feel like going anymore. The passion will allow this guy to figure out problems that you won't get to because you're just only concerned about the bottom line. So that to me is what this does in my heart and soul. And I hope that this is coming through loud and clear for other people because that's what it takes to be at the top. And that's what this guy's done.
Thank you, man. Thank you. I was struggling to find the words and I think you put that very well. Aaron, can you, to the best of your ability, man, because I know that this tugs at your heartstrings and it's evident how much you care about people. How do people take the passion that you have and apply that in their business? Now, look, admittedly, I love helping people. I want to create an impact as big as, like, I want to leave a legacy and I want to help people. I don't have that emotional connection to helping homeowners the way you do. I want to help people. And so does Steve. And that's part of who we are. But that comes from your past, right? Where how do people channel passion towards helping people in their business? What would you say to somebody that's listening that maybe their mindset and their focus is about the money and they're leading with the wrong intent? We run and operate businesses. We have to be profitable and we have to make money. That's important. Don't get me wrong. But when you lead with just looking at homeowners and looking at deals at dollars and cents, and there's nothing behind it, you're going to lose when you come up and face a guy like Aaron.
Yeah.
Like you're just going to lose.
I think at some point in life, we all, you know, maybe it's when we start getting older or I don't know at what point, but at some point we want to help people at some point in your life. And whether there's different avenues for that, there can be, you know, in real estate, there's coaching businesses. So people like, you know, raising other investors up and seeing them create wealth over years and create financial freedom in their lives. So I know coaches who love doing that. I'm sure you guys enjoy doing that as well. For me, I don't know. I've just got the connection. Maybe it's built over the years to these homeowners and tough situations.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just a connection for me.
Well, look, I think this is a perfect segue now to, like, again, it's on display how much you care about people and the level of sincerity that you approach business with. And I mean, it's just, it's you're very vulnerable and transparent about that, which I absolutely love. What are some of the things you have done that people listening or watching this can implement in their business? Like, what are some examples of things that you've done to go above and beyond for sellers? Because at the end of the day, we all know this, we're problem solvers.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. We're here to provide a solution to people's challenges. So, what are some things that you think people can maybe draw from that you've implemented in your business?
Sure.
Understanding that it comes from a genuine place. It's not just like a tactic, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So some of these solutions just develop over the years. Some of them, you know, maybe I've learned from others. I honestly can't remember over the years, but you know, now I'm in a position where I've got more money than when I started, right? So, but even, you know, looking back when I first started wholesale and doing a couple flips, I always had a, you know, I knew some other investors who had money, who had more cash than me, who wanted to buy these properties. So, you know, maybe now it's me, I can do it. Another investor can do it, whichever way, but whether I've got the cash, you've got the cash, or another investor of yours has the cash, there's all different solutions. So like one thing we do, I do give loans for a variety of purposes, like this, that, you know, the six-figure deal I mentioned we closed last week. I actually gave that person a loan. I think it was $20,000, so a second mortgage before closing, and that because they needed money to buy their next place. You know, a lot of people are just broke that we buy from, right? They have no money, so I gave them $20,000. You know, it was for a matter of weeks, and the loan wasn't where I make money. You know, I'm making money by buying the property and flipping it. So I just, the loan is part of the deal. But so we do that. We've done that various times, and it's often for people to have that deposit for the next house they're buying.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I've also done loans.
Actually, Aaron, before we get on to some of the other things that you've done, I want to kind of drill down into that a little bit. It seems like you've done this a variety of times, right? Or various times, I should say, as far as giving people a loan before closing. You've done that more than once or twice.
Totally, yeah.
How do you structure it and position it? Like, are you recording a lien or some sort of mortgage on the property? Like, yeah. How have you done it to make sure that, you know, obviously if the deal goes south and doesn't close, or so that people don't take advantage of you, so you don't get screwed? How do you structure that?
Yeah, I am. It is a second mortgage, so I'm registering a second mortgage. Okay. And I will only do that if there's substantial equity in the property. So I'm not, you know, I'm not going up to 90% of value or anything like that. Like, probably more like, you know, maybe 80% max, probably often 70 something percent of value. And also another thing we do is I call it something like, you know, get your cash sooner, move out later. So we do close, you know, we'll close and we'll let them move out. Sometimes it's been months later, or even, you know, I prefer weeks later. Sooner they move, the better. But, you know, there's some finite time frame, and we'll just have a holdback. Once again, people also, they need some equity in the property. So we're holding back like 30,000, 40,000. Because it around here, it's difficult to get people out of houses. You know, it's the whole mess of, you know, around here, it's the landlord-tenant board or going to court. Uh-huh. It'll take months, a lot of money. We don't want to deal with that. So, you know, usually 30, 40,000, that's a 30 to 40,000 reasons to move out on time, right?
Right.
Yeah. And we even have a penalty. You know, I have a penalty of like $500 a day. So that's per day if you move out late. And my lawyer's cut me a check because someone moved out 5 days late for $2,500. So
okay.
I'll take that risk. No okay. problem.
Have you noticed, Aaron, that more times than not, that's been the difference between you getting the deal and not getting the deal? Can you kind of speak a little bit to that?
Yeah, it's a big part of us getting the deal. And it's funny. It also plays into negotiations. When we throw in things like this, suddenly price is no longer the focus of negotiations. Mm. It's, how long can I stay after closing is the focus of negotiations. And we also throw in things like, okay, if you stay 1 month, we'll reduce our price, say $3,000 a month, 2 months, $6,000 a month. So how many months do you want to stay at whatever that is? You know, mm-hmm. So they're choosing between a price reduction of $3,000 or $6,000 and 1 or 2 months. So the focus has changed for negotiation.
Got it. Steve, have you seen anybody in your market that you know regularly does that? Because here in my market, maybe there's one or two people that I can think have done that, but it's certainly not like common practice.
I'm sure I've done it at some point in the past. I don't recall off the top of my head. I typically don't like to do that, which I'm sure that most investors don't, you know, for a number of different reasons. But Aaron, I'm curious, not to get in the weeds with this, but let's do it anyway. How are you handling the insurance in that situation? So typically we buy with a builder's risk policy with a liability rider. But in that policy, it basically says, look, no one's going to be occupying this premises. So do you then get some sort of a renter policy and then switch it over? How does that work?
You know, that did come up with one of my private lenders. And, you know, I can't exactly remember what's happened, but basically between my insurance broker and the lender, it is some kind of blanket, you know, builder's risk insurance I have. Mm-hmm. But I don't know, but basically the insurer said it's okay.
Okay.
I know it was talked about I didn't get into all the details, but
gotcha.
I've got a good insurance broker and a good policy, and they just make it work.
All taken care of. Okay.
Got it. All right. Cool. So aside from that, which obviously is a huge value add for distressed sellers, people that are really going through something. I mean, man, if I was in that position and I could get some money that was much needed, and especially just obviously the way that you're so professional and just caring and giving. What are some of the other things that you've done? And not so much, I don't want to make this so much about what you've done, Aaron, because obviously you're very successful. You have a great business. But I want people to start drawing some parallels and see what can they swipe and deploy in their business. Maybe sure. They haven't even thought about going above and beyond if they're direct to seller the way that you have. So I want to kind of plant some seeds and give people ideas of what they can do to stand out from the competition and get more deals and ultimately help more people.
Yeah. Well, another thing, and this, you know, and when I say give people loans, it doesn't have to always be your money. Like there's other people who want to make a high return. Like I'm talking on these second mortgages, we're talking, you know, 12% or 14%, things like this, you know, fees and interest. So like I do really like to offer people, you know, what I think is best for them. And, you know, my wife happens to be a realtor. So this works well. You know, I give people different options. I can buy your house. The price is going to be lower, or I'll get you a loan, second mortgage. And you can, so this is for people who want to, they can say put new flooring, tidy up the place. And also often a reason for the second mortgage is to pay off the lender because they're getting behind on their mortgage, catch up on your arrears, give you breathing room. And you've got my family realtor to sell with. So we make money on, you know, probably most of the money is made on the realtor side. We're charging full pop. And also when you're doing things like this, people aren't negotiating you down on, say, your realtor commission.
Right.
You're offering them above and beyond.
Right.
They're not nickeling and diming you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, most of the money is made on the realtor commission, which just happens to be a family member. And we're also, you know, making a bit of money on a loan. It's you know, we're talking like 6 months loans typically. So we're making a few thousand there as well. So, but honestly, I'd make more money if I bought and rehabbed or resold the property, but I just feel better about it. And we still make a good chunk of money. And the seller, the homeowner, really feels we gave them great options, and they're so thankful.
Great. Yep. Yep. Got it, man. Got it. By the way, you sent me an email over the weekend and you put higher VTB offer. I feel kind of dumb for not knowing the acronym VTB, but what exactly is that?
Just like vendor take back. So a seller financing.
Okay. Is that okay?
And maybe my terminology is Canadian, so I'm not sure how widespread it is.
Well, I don't feel so bad now. I felt like I should have known what VTB was, but so vendor take back. So that's basically seller financing in Canada.
That's right. So yeah. So I will give people multiple, like this is more for a free and clear house or if they have a very low mortgage. It's more of a negotiation strategy as well. If they have a price, let's say they want 400,000, I want to pay them say 370. I'll give them more, the cash offer for 370, but I'll give them an option, maybe 400. Yeah. I'll give you 400 now. You know, you'll take, you know, 30 grand and the rest you hold until after I, you know, say for 8 months or whatever period of time want to give me time to renovate and sell the house. So it's just to give people a higher price. Like it works better for me because I put less cash in. I don't have to get a private lender. So the numbers are better for me at 400 than actually paying 370.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
You know, they're holding the mortgage. I avoid the costs of a private lender and, you know, they get more money if they want it. But I think the reality is most people want their fast cash. So
yeah,
I give them that option, make myself look like a generous hero. And, you know, and really it's giving them the option. Are you willing to wait a bit for more money? And most people say, no, I'm not. Give me the less money now.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's up to them.
And my guess is the majority of the time they take that option.
They take the less money sooner.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and exactly right. I mean, most of these people are exchanging, you know, equity for speed, time, and convenience.
Yeah,
is really what it boils down to. You mentioned something, and I didn't want to just kind of gloss over it. Are you typically presenting sellers two or three different options as far as like because you know most wholesalers are one trick ponies, right? Here's my super low cash offer. If it works, great. If it's not, if it doesn't work, then, you know, obviously they can't do it. But it sounds like, obviously, you know, with your vendor takebacks or your seller financing is what's most commonly referred to in the U.S. It sounds like you're always giving them those two options.
Yeah, I'm often giving people multiple options, but a lot of it's scenario based, and some of it's just in conversation as well. But there are times, especially when it's, you know, I will put offers down in writing, use a cover letter, especially when we're dealing with, say, big families, or it's, you know, actually I just bought a house the other day. It was, you know, the son's showing me the house for the senior father who's sick and not around. So, you know, when you're talking to people through people, I like to kind of put offers in writing, do a cover letter and this sort of thing. So definitely when I put it in writing, I kind of list out options, mm-hmm. give them a choice. And also when you give people options, it's another negotiation strategy to just pick one instead of, you know, focusing, say, on the price.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I like it.
Yep. 100%, man. 100%. Aaron, what's your what's the team look like today? Because I remember at our last mastermind retreat, your acquisition manager is still with you, right?
Yeah, I've still got one you know, home buying specialist, one acquisitions person, and I got a right hand, an office manager, and I've got Manuel in the Philippines, a great full time VA, great for admin and general assistance. And yep. Tomorrow we have a second acquisitions person. So
beautiful, man. Talk to us about some of the challenges that you've experienced, because we talked about this before we went live, right? Is that, you know, having hosted a podcast for almost 4 years now, what I find is that listeners and subscribers really appreciate not just like the wins, like, hey, crushed it, made 170 grand on the deal, which is amazing. You want to learn from that, but also you want to learn from some of the challenges, like some of the battle scars that we've all had, right? What are some of the things you've experienced in building a team that, looking back, you're like, well, you know, I wish I had a mulligan there, or I want a do-over, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, I think in general, like for me, I just should have hired earlier and hired faster. You know, that probably would have made my life easier. But, you know, when hiring, you know, for my salesperson, I should have definitely, I put her on salary, which, you know, for a salesperson, not a good idea. So, and we're, you know, I'm talking with her, there's sort of a plan in place to go towards the commission plan, which, you know, she can make a lot more money. But definitely with salespeople, you know, like my new person coming on, it's a salary plus commission plan. But, you know, if they want to make the big money, they got to make those commissions and just, you know, work like a intrapreneur or self, what do you call it? A self-employed person. Like, I want someone who kind of feels like an entrepreneur within my business.
Yeah. And go ahead, Steve.
Yeah. Nope, that was good. Keep going on that. I've got a completely different topic I want to get into with Aaron.
Yeah, no, and one of the things I want to highlight here before we kind of transition is that, you know, I remember, and hopefully, Aaron, you don't mind kind of getting into, we won't get into like the weeds with this, but like, you know, as an entrepreneur, if you're building a team and you're building specifically a sales team, you generally speaking, and I use the word generally very like loosely, 99.999% of the time, you want a salesperson that they don't want their income to be capped, right? Like, so if you have a salesperson that's just all that just wants salary, I question if that's the right salesperson. So the compensation structure that you have, I have found that I've made mistakes along the way. The compensation structure for your salespeople is extremely important. So that's really an area to look at before hiring. Know your numbers, understand your P&L, and I've done everything from paying X percent off of the gross deal to it's a draw against commission to 100% commission only. I mean, I've kind of done the gamut. And I remember that's one of the things we spoke about at our last mastermind retreat is, you know, is Steve okay? What happened there? Did he sneeze or did he fall? Probably
family COVID challenges. A few minutes ago, I had my daughter knocking on my window. She's playing outside, so it's stuff.
Oh, like okay. That. I thought Steve fell off the chair or something, or he's like violently sneezed. Anyways, kind of wrapping up my thought is that if you're building an organization, you want salespeople that are that don't want to be just salary, right? Like you want hungry people that are going to be go-getters, that are going to go out there. And that's extremely, extremely important.
Very important.
Yeah. Yeah. Steve, you're right there.
I've learned my lesson, Alex.
Yeah.
I know. You took a little bit of a beating at the last retreat. Now. I say beating, obviously, tongue in cheek, but
yeah.
Yeah.
Steve, my apologies there. It's homeschool university here at the Cavanaugh residence. And my daughter just had an issue with her Zoom call that she's on right now. So I attempted to help her in the 10 seconds that I stepped off to the side. My bad. So, guys, I wanted to get into the marketing part of this conversation, if you don't mind. Obviously, Aaron, I know that you don't want to give away all your secrets and we would never ask you to here publicly. But what are you doing that's working real well for marketing?
Well, I've been big on the internet. I've been doing like PPC, Google, for example, since I think 2010. Mm-hmm. And then, I'm on the carrot juice, the investor carrot, for a few years now. So, I do well SEO. I do well with pay-per-click. A lot of the times I've sent out hundreds of thousands of letters over the years too, but honestly, for the size of my team, what keeps me busy is internet stuff right now. All my SEO and pay-per-click, they keep us busy. Whenever I want a little influx, I can send out some mail, that sort of thing. But over the years, I've done a ton of stuff. I've got lots of deals off bandit signs. I've still got some nice sticker signs up across the Toronto area. I've done a ton of stuff, newspapers, but really, I've built an internet presence and that's cranking out every day.
Aaron, what percentage of your deals would you say come from SEO, pay-per-click, like the online side of things?
Yeah, I do get referrals as well, but it's definitely over 80% coming from online right now.
Okay. 80%. That's a big number.
Yeah. Over 80%. Yeah.
Wow. If you don't mind me asking, what kind of budget, and guys realize that when I ask this question, these numbers are going to vary from market to market, right? Aaron's in Toronto. Yeah. My guess is the majority of you guys watching are here in the United States. So take these numbers with a grain of salt. But do you mind sharing, Aaron, what kind of marketing ad spend on the online side of things you're deploying?
Yeah, on pay-per-click, I'm doing over $4,000 a month typically these days.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. That's, if I was in the U.S., it'd probably be more. Like, Toronto's getting more competitive on, pay-per-click. Mm-hmm. But, I think we're still pretty low compared to some of the U.S. cities.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Very cool.
Probably in the U.S. that'd be like 15,000. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I can tell you that when my team and I did pay-per-click for, 6 month period, which is a pretty small amount of time, we were spending $2,000 a month and we couldn't even get our foot in the door here in Miami with $2,000 a month. I mean, it was just a complete waste of money.
Yeah.
So... yeah, know your area before you go, throwing money at pay-per-click. So, yeah. Hey, Cap, I don't know if you have any questions for Aaron before. If you do, guys, if you have any questions, we want to try to condense these lives a little bit. We're so grateful and thankful that the majority of you guys stick through these 90-minute live marathons that we've done. So we want to try to keep these a little bit closer to an hour, although we're happy to just stay on as long as there's questions coming. So if you guys have any questions for Aaron, whether it be on the marketing side, whether it be on the wholesale side, fix and flip, how he negotiates, how he goes above and beyond for sellers, his rental portfolio, the wealth side, anything. And/or if you have any questions for Steve and I, then fire away. Otherwise, we will aim to wrap this up in the next probably 10 to 15 minutes.
Any Canadians out there? It's an American audience today.
any Canadians out there? Let's see.
Any Canadians who want to stand up and raise their hand to get killed by the assassin? I don't know.
where do I have my banner for the Canadian quiet assassin? For somebody that may have just joined us in the last 15, 20 minutes, they're like, did this guy just say Canadian assassin? What's going on here? Amazing. Amazing. Aaron, what else, brother? What have you found? Let's talk actually now that COVID has hit us, how have you had to, kind of adjust and modify how you're doing business?
Let's see. I've never really focused much on buying sight unseen or buying virtually. But just a week ago, I did my first, you know, sight unseen purchase. You know, I bought it. Then we went and had a showing. So I just made a conditional on viewing it. So, you know, a few days later, I took a couple investors to see it. But I like it. I like COVID. It's because I like the direction it's taken us. It gives an excuse to not have to go see properties. You know, I can really buy them sight unseen, and it makes my life easier. So I want to do more of that.
Aaron, you're a funny dude, man. I don't think I've heard 45 plus days into this. I don't think I've heard anybody say, I love COVID.
Okay. Another thing I like I know the lawyer thing is different in the US, but here, you know, I think it's more like New York is similar. Like, we each have a lawyer. I got to go sign up my lawyers. The seller has to go sign up. So now I did my first Zoom call last week, signing with my lawyers, which makes my life so much easier. So for me, it's like I just see all these benefits, and our deal flow has gone up the past few weeks because, you know, a lot of it's COVID style deals. People just want to sell the easy way. So where's the problem in our industry? No, actually, there are problems selling properties. There are problems. Even just last week, a lot of financing issues I'm finding. Mostly it's, you know, people will buy conditional financing. Then, you know, after 5 days, people end up just waiving condition. I mean, sorry, they just back out of the deal. Mm. But last week we actually had to post. Right now, it looks like the deal's still going to happen, but they basically postponed closing. The financing didn't work out in time, so they've, you know, asked for another couple of weeks. They're trying to close as fast as possible, but things are pretty uncertain right now, especially financing, closing deals. We haven't had these. I don't remember having a deal not close. Like, I'm talking one of my rehabs that I'm selling. I don't remember having one close. You know, I know it's happened occasionally, but it just doesn't happen around here. Mm. But it just happened last week.
Got it. Are you tightening up your buy box? Are you putting more, you know, in the coffers, so to speak? Are you adjusting, like, you know, are you having more reserves to kind of account for some of the uncertainty in your market right now?
I definitely want to keep some cash in the bank account right now. That's for sure. Just because things are unexpected. I do want to try to buy in the lower price ranges. Like, I know I mentioned to you, we just did basically our highest priced flip to date, earlier this year. We just sold it for under 2 million, 1.98. So bought it for 1.6, made over six figures on that one too. Woohoo!
Amazing.
But we don't buy those kind of properties every month or every year either. But I'm glad I sold that one. It hasn't closed, so I should got to be careful what I say about that one. It closes in a few weeks in May. Yeah, I shouldn't talk too much about it. But I am glad I got it sold in the early parts of COVID. Let me just say that. And I hope that cash is hitting my bank account pretty soon.
Yeah.
I don't want delays on that one.
That's pretty awesome, man. That's pretty awesome. Steve, what do you got for Aaron, brother?
Not much, man. I just, Aaron, man, I can't tell you how much I appreciate having a guy like you in the group, man. You are just, you're open, you're honest, you're forthcoming, you're humble, but super, super successful. And it's just a large value to have you sitting in the room at our Ascend retreats and just have you guys be a part of it. So I was just wondering, like, from your perspective, what's the biggest value to you in being in a group like Ascend?
Yeah, I guess I really like both the mastermind component and the one-on-one coaching component. Sometimes it's one or the other. Having both, I think, is really, you know, it's really beneficial to me. Alex has a wholesaling business. He's had, he's grown a bigger team than me. He's been doing it like a lot longer with a team than me. I've been able to just, you know, swipe and deploy resources, tools, processes, you know, procedures from him. So that's really, it's an accelerator, a total accelerator for my business, speeds things up. And it's just great to have a one-on-one coach for like team building as well. Like I said, I've just been building a team for about a year and a half. So a lot of things are new for me. It's great to have Alex to bounce ideas off and to point me in the right direction. But masterminds, there's a lot of benefit to masterminds. I do love the in-person masterminds. You just get so much feedback from different voices, different opinions, different experiences. And it's life and business too. You know, one of the benefits here that, you know, people might not think of is it really got me having regular date nights with my wife, which, you know, makes life better.
lot better.
Yeah, that's right. Because we're both, you know, we work a lot. We get pretty busy sometimes. Like, and okay, date night's been hard to do with this COVID and the kid home and babysitters and all this. Well, we can't go out anywhere, so
yeah.
So date night's been tough. Like we're feeling it now. But before COVID, you know, for many months we had this nice regular date night thing going, and it was great.
Well, now look at us. Well, we've been, my wife and I have been doing one every Thursday night, and we're just, you know, we kind of pick a meal that the kids typically won't eat, which is pretty much anything that's not a hot dog or a hamburger. And then, we make the kids and we rent them a movie. They sit down, they watch a movie for the evening and put themselves to bed. Then Carrie and I make whatever we want to eat. We go out back and we eat it, and we kind of pretend like the kids aren't here. So that's worked out real well for us. So I suggest you guys try something along those lines. It can be a lot of fun.
Yeah. And I think also it's interesting for people watching this and listening to this to think, like, did he just say one of the things he got out of the mastermind is, you know, now him and his wife are having date nights? Because, you know, Ascend isn't just about making more money and growing a big business and the whole nine. That's a big part of it. Don't get me wrong. And there's a lot of business discussed and the brain power within our group, as you guys have just gotten a little bit taste of throughout the last 4 weeks. But, you know, it's more of a holistic approach. You know, our belief is that if your life is not in alignment and if it's just not, if you don't have a vision for your life, then you could have a great business, but are you going to have a great life? You know, and that's what you really need to consider and ask yourself. We see so many people hustling and grinding and just deal to deal and pursuit of money, but yet so many other areas of their life are suffering, right? You think about the wheel of life and you have the different components. Is it totally like misaligned or out of balance? So we take a little bit of a different approach than maybe some other groups out there. Aaron, last question for you, brother, as we start to kind of wrap this up. What's the experience like for you now that you've been at the mastermind retreats live? Obviously, you talked about the one-on-one coaching component, so really appreciate your thoughts and your words there. What's the experience like being there, particularly with the others that are in the room?
Yeah, it's like I do enjoy the wealth of ideas, and we do come there with problems and sort of challenges that we want to address and hopefully, you know, get a game plan to overcome. And, you know, it is great. The one-on-one coaching is great, Alex, but I know you don't know everything. So
I don't,
you know, it is good as well to have the group pouring into your problems. Right.
Yeah.
It's definitely like I said, you know, Alex, you're great helping with the team building as well, but you know, the group's been a great help with all their ideas, hiring people, you know, I know a couple of weeks you had Matt Fullerton, he's been a sales manager for years, so he's great input when hiring salespeople.
Yeah.
But you know, really there's a ton of people who've given tremendous value to me from their input, and whatever issues, problems I come with, whether it's business, personal, it's that mastermind from the group. It's been great.
Yeah. Yeah. Appreciate your thoughts, man. Steve, let's start to kind of wind this down, man. Any final words on your end? And then Aaron, I definitely want, if people have any questions or if they want to connect with you, if we have any friends watching this north of the border that maybe want to connect with you on some deals or otherwise, I mean, Steve and I, we're all about just connecting with the right people. Like, you can never have enough quality people in your life that are also successful and like-minded. And so that's what our community is about. Anybody that, actually, why don't we just go ahead and do that now? Aaron, for people that want to reach out to you, maybe they have some questions about your business, maybe their joint venture opportunities, or even if they have questions about your involvement in Ascend, where's the best place to reach out and connect with you?
They can probably connect on Facebook. You know, there's a lot of Aaron Moores around, so I don't know how easy that is. But
there's only one Canadian assassin, though, brother.
True enough. Or my website, housedealsgta.ca. You know, the phone number's there. Contact form, once again, housedealsgta.ca.
Hold on. I'm going to have to add that, man. That's too many letters for even me, dude. So hold on one second.
House GTA is Greater Toronto Area, just to put perspective.
.ca?
Yeah, housedealsgta.
Okay, got it. .ca. Let me know if I got this
.com,
right.
No, no.
.ca, right? Is that right?
That's right, yeah.
Okay, beautiful. Beautiful. Awesome, man. Steve, any parting words here?
Not really. Just other than, man, you know, I really like Aaron a lot. And I think that folks need to pay attention to some of the stuff that we've talked about, especially about the passion, certainly about the marketing, and certainly about Aaron's observations on the current market. All very, very, very timely, actionable, good stuff. So, Aaron, thank you for your time with us today, man.
Pleasure to be here, and a pleasure, you know, coaching and mastermind with you guys.
Awesome.
Yeah, brother. Well, parting words here for you. I think if there's one big takeaway for me, again, I don't expect, you know, if you're watching this and listening to this, you can't manufacture passion, right? You have it or you don't. And if you don't have passion for homeowners and you have passion for this business, that's perfectly okay. But figure out how you can express your passion and your drive and your commitment, hopefully, to want to help and impact others through your business, right? Your business, you might not have the same level of passion that Aaron has, where, like, it's obvious he gets emotional even thinking and talking about it. You might not have that, and that's okay, but where can you find passion? And maybe your business is a vehicle to connect with people. Maybe your business is meant, it's got to be more than just making money, right? So if your business can exist to help and provide a valuable service to others, figure out where you can potentially connect with people, and through your community, your business can serve in a way to not just provide value and a valuable service, but so that you can exercise and express your passion and what you love doing through your business. So that's the seed, I guess, I want to plant with you guys, because I don't know very many people like Aaron that just have that level of passion for wanting to help people. And it's no surprise to me. That is so awesome. Look at that. So cute. How are you? Aaron, we should just get her on it. You can just bounce, man. So, she's adorable, man. That's what it's all about, man. She's adorable. So, brother, thank you, man, for always wearing your heart on your sleeve. You know, when we encourage our members and our community that to be a part of this, you got to be real. You got to be authentic. You got to be transparent. You exhibit that at the highest level. And that's a compliment. That's so, yeah, man. That's thank you. Really appreciate you, man. Thank you. So, guys, thank you once again for joining us. We are coming up on an hour here, and that's about the sweet spot that we want to keep these. We will continue to answer any questions going forward, so feel free to use the comments box, and myself, Steve, and or Aaron will circle back and answer your question. And if you guys are getting value from this, let us know. Again, like, share is the best way that you can show that. But if otherwise, just reach out to us and let us know. And Steve and I are having a lot of fun doing these. And there's no shortage of just successful, awesome Ascend members that we can get on here and just talk business, talk life. So if you guys are getting value from this, let us know. And we'll continue doing it. Aaron, Steve, anything before we hit the end broadcast here?
Good to go.
Good to go. Maybe I'll go on Facebook and see what all this commenting is about.
Something tells me too that people are going to be reaching out to you about this Canadian assassin nickname that you now have. You might need to change your profile from Aaron Moore to the. What does your wife think about this, by the way? What does she think about the Canadian assassin?
I try not to mention it to her.
and if you guys watching, if you guys knew his wife Christina, she is awesome and she takes no BS. I can tell you that.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Amazing, amazing. Well, send our love to her. I'm sure we will see you here in Miami in hopefully in August when we get together for our next mastermind retreat. So keep crushing, brother. Keep changing and impacting people's lives. And Steve and I will do our best to continue to do that through our businesses and, you know, through these Facebook lives as well. So,
all right, guys.
Thank you. Bye.
Appreciate you guys.
Have a good one, guys. Bye now. Take care.
Bye. This show is sponsored by Ascend, our in-house assembly of success-minded people, business owners, and entrepreneurs actively collaborating together to ascend our businesses to new heights while also experiencing truly happier, more fulfilling lives at the same time. We believe it's not an either-or, but you can truly have both and. It's the unique and rare combination of mastermind coaching and community that makes Ascend so special. But it's definitely not for everyone. If you're an entrepreneur who's looking for more than your typical mastermind or coaching, and you think these things can help you accelerate your ascension from where you are today to where you want to go while living a more meaningful and rewarding life in the process, then you can head over to ascendyoursuccess.com, click the application button, and we'll go from there.
That's all for this episode of the Flip Empire Show, but we have you covered with even more expertise and resources on our website. Text EMPIRE to 67076 or head over to flipempire.com to join the newsletter and gain free instant access to our video module training course called 5 Ways to Scale Your Real Estate Wholesaling Business to 6 Figures in 6 Months or Less. For more interviews, strategies, and insights for the smart real estate investor, we'll catch you next time here on the Flip Empire Show.